and welcome to The Watchers Diaries, a weekly podcast all about Buffy. I'm Mary.
And I'm Dylan.
And this week we're talking about Season 1, Episode 5, Never Kill a Boy on the First Date.
Yeah, you need to wait until at least the 6th at a minimum.
The 6th?
Yeah.
So you have to wait longer to kill a boy than you would to have sex with them.
Well, so here's the thing. I don't wait past the first date anyway, so it's kind of a give or take.
Okay. So just don't follow your example at all.
Exactly.
But, you know, don't wait to kill them.
6 dates minimum. You want to be able to get some money out of them. Come on now, because we're all going for rich people. Obviously, we have great taste like that. And we need to stuff our bank accounts a little bit.
Yeah. I can't argue with that. Like, yeah, getting money out of people before you kill them does sound like a good plan.
Mm-hmm.
Dear FBI listening to this podcast, we swear we didn't do it.
Whatever it is, we didn't do it.
All right. So before we delve into the episode, I do have a few updates.
Yay.
So which one do you want first? Do you want my update on Pike? Do you want my trivia fact about Xander? Or do you want my findings from the homework assignment you gave me?
I want Pike, homework assignment, then Xander, in that order.
All right. So Pike. So the book where Pike comes to Sunnydale did arrive, and I looked through it and I found the part in the book where Pike is getting to know Xander and Willow, and they do confirm that Pike is the same age as Buffy. He mentions that the last time he saw her was fall of sophomore year, right before Buffy moved to Sunnydale. Only she had been expelled back then, and he had dropped out. He continues to say that once he found out what was lurking in the dark, he could no longer concentrate on school. So the show continuity takes a bit of a different route with Pike. I guess when they first met, he hadn't dropped out of school yet, but after finding out like vampires lurked in the dark and everything, he did drop out of school. And the book does also confirm they went to Vegas together. But I'm not going to say any more than that because I know we're going to cover the whole book at some point down the road.
I just won. What is continuity and who needs it? Obviously not that book. Then, so two small children just fucked off to Vegas for funsingtons and no one questioned this. And I get it. I was going into Boston by myself when I was very young and going to various LGBTQ youth meetings. But like, that is different. Going 30 minutes into a city in the same state versus crossing state lines as we itty bitty baby children and going to fucking Vegas.
I mean, I think a lot of people questioned it. I think that's part of why like Joyce is kind of pissed the first half of first season is she like is dealing with her delinquent child who burned down a school and then skipped town.
I really wish we could have seen that. I wish there could have been like season 0 where we see Buffy burn down the school, immediately run off to Vegas, and Joyce just sitting there with all of her stolen art goods like, God damn, this is bringing too much attention to me and I do not appreciate it.
That's the real reason Joyce is pissed. She does not want the FBI catching on to her smuggling ring.
Exactly.
So homework. I did my homework and I watched a few episodes of Sabrina and I have solved the stair issue.
Mm-hmm.
The episodes I watched were from season 2 and the Spellman house has 2 sets of stairs. There's the set of stairs in the kitchen and there's the set of stairs in the front hall. So in A Goddess Sabrina, you see Sabrina in the kitchen studying, and then the very next scene you see her at the top of those stairs near the linen closet. So I think those stairs near the linen closet are the ones that go from the kitchen upstairs. This was reinforced in the next episode, Witch Trash, because the cousins come to visit. They come through the linen closet and they say something about going down to the dining room to have lunch or talk it out or whatever. You see them go down the upstairs hallway, and then in the next scene they're coming down those front steps. So those front steps are located at the other end of the upstairs hallway. That's why you never see Sabrina go from the living room to the stairs by the linen closet, because those are 2 separate stairs.
I don't think I believe it.
All right, I'm just telling you what I noticed. I did my homework. I was very observant. I took notes, and this is what I found out.
I'm proud of you. And we did also learn that apparently, according to Panda, I sound like Salem Saberhagen and you sound like Sabrina.
That was the best thing. She comes out of the other room and she's like, are you listening to yourself? And I'm like, no, I'm watching Sabrina. And she's like, oh. So I was like, all right, I'm going to accept that Dylan and I now sound like Sabrina and Salem, because that is the best thing ever. So my third thing, Xander. In the Witch episode, we talk about how Xander is called Xander instead of Alex and how weird it is to call him Alex. Well, it turns out there's a reason he's called Xander, and it connects back to the Buffy movie.
Okay.
A Xander is a fish. It's a fish that is also known as a pike perch.
How did you figure this out?
So, okay, how I figured this
out. What do you Google?
I actually did not figure this out. I just fact checked it as somebody popped up one of those like useless trivia memes in one of my Buffy groups, and this is what it was. And I was like, huh, I wonder if that's true. Because like half the time those things aren't true.
Yeah.
And half the time they are. And lo and behold, I Googled Xander fish and it told me a Xander was a fish in the same family as a pike. So I'm guessing that connection is intentional.
Huh. You learn something new every day.
I know. It's very exciting. But okay, let's break down the episode. Never Kill a Boy on the First Date. It aired March 31st, 1997.
Was that a Tuesday yet?
Was it a Tuesday? Let's find out.
You didn't search it. I win.
I didn't. I'm going to guess that none of...
It was a Monday.
Yeah, I was going to say, I'm going to guess that none of first season was a Tuesday. I'm going to guess they made the switch during another season.
Uh-huh.
Because that's usually when they move time slots. They either do it in between seasons or they do it when like you take a mid-season break. And this season, I think, was short enough that I'm going to guess they didn't switch the time until we got to second season. But we'll keep checking. But we are still on a Monday. We're not yet at a Tuesday. And our synopsis for this episode is, Buffy is heartbroken to learn that she must break her date with a dreamboat in order to stake a vampire who has risen in fulfillment of the master's prophecy.
Dun, dun. Done. Also, fun fact, this episode aired during the April Fool's Day blizzard in Massachusetts that I remember running around with no shoes in. That's all.
Was it only a blizzard in Massachusetts? Because I'm trying to remember if I remember a blizzard happening.
It looks like it was mainly Massachusetts, a little bit into New Hampshire, like the surrounding states, but it mainly hit where I was.
Okay, it was like a New England thing. It wouldn't have been down here and us weird mid-Atlantic people.
Yeah, nope.
Okay.
Oh, wait, it did dump snow from Maryland to Maine, but like the heaviest part looking at the little map thing is in my area of Massachusetts.
Okay, so we probably got some like weird flurrying that we were like, what the fuck? It's April.
Yep.
So I was looking up some of the music from this episode because I wanted to double check that it was the song I thought it was. And in doing that, I stumbled across some of the international titles for this episode, and some of them are hysterical.
Oh, please try and pronounce these. Please.
All right, so I'm about to butcher a couple of languages. The first one is the Finnish title, which is Treffit Vampirin Kanssa, which apparently means dating a vampire.
Hmm.
The French title is Un Premier Rendezvous Manque, which means a missed first date. My favorite one, I think, is the German, which I know I'm not going to pronounce this wrong. If we have any German followers or listeners, I am so, so sorry. Un Buffy Lieb Six Langer. Without Buffy, you live longer. And that is 100% what I'm going to title this episode of the podcast.
But where is the lie?
Right? Hungarian is Elzert Rendezvous, which means screwed date. Japanese, I am not even going to try because there's no way to even know how this is pronounced.
You mean you can't read kanji?
I cannot read kanji, I'm sorry. But the Japanese translates to don't kill him on the first date. And the Polish, which I should know because my dad's family is Polish. Now, I mean, they're like generations back Polish. I don't think anyone I ever had contact with in my dad's family spoke Polish.
Mm-hmm.
But the heritage on my dad's side is Polish. So I feel like I should know how to pronounce this, but I don't. Ni zabija na pierzja ronce, and it's don't kill on the first date. Going back to our advice from a few minutes ago, I kind of like some of those.
They are fun. So I tried seeing if I could find the. I think it's when kanji is spelled out phonetically with English letters. It's called Romanized. And so I tried googling it and then translating the page, and the translation of the kanji it makes it the first date he killed not be. Google Translate never fails.
I mean, that does make it sound like we're in the middle of like a Shakespeare monologue.
Yes. But for the German one, I think it's Ona. I took German for 2 years.
So made you read that one.
It didn't stick.
Ona Buffy Lep 6.
Leaped.
Lipped.
Leaped.
Leaped. Ona Buffy Leaped 6 Longer.
I think that's as close as we're gonna get it.
that's definitely my favorite.
Yes. Without Buffy, you live longer. Rude, but not incorrect.
So we start this episode in the cemetery, and I have another small correction. This one brought to us courtesy of my supplemental materials.
Mm-hmm.
When we were talking about the pilot, we theorized that the cemetery they use was most likely Hollywood Forever, because everyone knows that one. It's very easy to get filming rights. They don't use that cemetery. The cemetery sequences in season one were shot at the Rosedale Cemetery in Los Angeles.
Ah, I was kind of close when I tried to call it the Rose Bowl Cemetery. Look at me, knowing my West Coast cemeteries, apparently.
We open on a fight scene as Buffy, and by Buffy, we mean the very obvious stunt double, is fighting a vampire. She stakes the vampire, turning him into dust as Giles pops up from behind a nearby grave, critiquing her technique.
Rude.
Well, it's not rude. It's his job.
Eh, rude.
Okay. Apparently, he thinks she's spending too much time and energy engaging the vamps when it should really just be plunge and move on. Fun fact, speaking of plunging, to dust a vampire using computer graphics cost the producers of the show $5,000 a pop.
Fuck.
Yeah, I think that's why in season one, we kind of see, just sometimes see the vamps like fall out of frame.
That's very fair. Very, very fair. Shit. I wish I had a skill that I could charge people $5,000 a pop, aside from just being cute.
Right? My aunt's here today. Mm. And I was trying to explain the podcast to my aunt. She's like, do you make money off of this? And I'm like, yeah, I wish.
Nope. No, we do not.
I wish someone was paying me to ramble about Buffy at the internet.
People just give me money. I'm very adorable. I know you haven't seen my face outside of a cartoon, but I'm not lying. I am not a liar, no matter what Mary says.
Did I say you weren't adorable?
You probably would.
His lecture is interrupted when he notices a ring in the grass, one he uses his pen to pick up. This isn't a crime scene, Giles. You could have just picked it up normally.
It could have been cursed.
I was gonna say, maybe he doesn't want to take the chance that it's cursed or a magic ring.
Look, he doesn't want to go the way of Dumbledore, all right? Like, that arm looked very gross, and they did not have the funding to CGI that arm.
So he couldn't get cursed because they did not yet have it in the budget for him to be cursed.
Exactly. He pulled a Deadpool and knew that it would be too expensive. So he's like, well, shit, I better be nice to the people running the show that I am currently in and not get cursed.
I like that Giles has fourth wall awareness.
If anyone on the show would, it would be Giles.
I mean, this is true. I'm not denying this.
Or Oz.
Yeah. No, definitely Giles or Oz.
I feel like Oz would have been a great narrator for the show.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, he would have. So Buffy quips about Giles fencing the vampire's stuff, and she would know because, as we mentioned in our episode on The Witch, we are pretty much convinced that Joyce is actually an international black market art dealer. So yeah, she could probably show Giles a thing or two about selling rare artifacts.
That would be a great date.
It would be a great date. Just like fencing like stolen like shit together, making a ton of money on like the occult black market.
Exactly. And then inevitably turning traitor on your partner for the biggest score of your life and happily walking away while they either get thrown in jail or eaten by a monster.
Okay, like, why did you have to ruin this? For like, it's the perfect date. And then you're like, and then I will betray my lover and watch as they get eaten and I will escape with all the cash. That is no longer the perfect date.
I never said that was going to happen on the first date. I told you, I wait until the sixth.
Okay, so the perfect date is the sixth date when you get a whole bunch of money and then betray your lover.
Yes.
Giles, though, isn't thinking about this perfect date or all the money he could make selling ancient artifacts. At least not yet. Give him a few seasons. He instead is wondering if the ring means the vampire was not random, but here on a mission. Something that has him wanting to do what Giles always does and consult his books.
I did not understand that leap. Like, what would a ring? Why? What? How? How, Giles?
I didn't understand that either. We're going to touch on that, I think, a little bit in this episode, because I think when they start looking into the order, Giles is very surprised the order of Aurelius has come to town. And I'm like, didn't y'all know the master was here? So I think we've got to chalk up this weirdness to plot device, kind of like we've got to chalk up them explaining shit they would obviously know to the viewing audience.
Yeah, that's fair.
There's no way you'd be like, this vampire has a ring. He may be like, what if the vampire was like one of those 70s vampires from the pilot, just wearing some big tacky pendant?
Or the vampire could have been married before getting vamped.
This is true. So Giles says he's going to consult his books. And just as he says this, this giant tome slams down. But it's not Giles who is searching for something within its pages. Oh no, it's the master.
It's the Spanish Inquisition.
It's the Spanish Inquisition.
Yes.
Well, no one ever expects that. Standing at the pulpit, once again, conducting some bastardized version of a religious ceremony, reading from this text, whatever it is. Like, he's reading from a gospel, though I guess for the Order it kind of is their gospel because it's filled with their prophecies and their history. And so he speaks of the Anointed One, of how he will rise from the ashes of five deaths, of how the Slayer will not know him, and how he will lead the Slayer into hell. All of this ends, of course, with him saying something along the lines of, "And so it is written, and so it shall be." Seriously, as someone who is raised Catholic, this is just like, we're just going down a checklist. This is just mass. Like, I'm just checking off my boxes.
I mean, I would go to this mass.
So he then goes on to talk about how one of the brethren will go out the night before and get himself killed. That's not actually written in the book. That's just the master being really pissed off at his followers' stupidity, because that's something he is not going to tolerate, and he's definitely not tolerating it from those he has left. As he throws one of the remaining minions across the room, he remarks, "Here endeth the lesson." So a few things about this phrase. We're going to hear this phrase spoken twice more over the course of the series. Once by Spike in Full for Love in season 5, and once by Buffy in Showtime in season 7. The phrase also appears in the 1987 movie The Untouchables, spoken by Sean Connery's character, Jim Malone, and it's a traditional wrap-up phrase of Bible readings, especially the King James's version, which goes back to this whole Catholic mass aesthetic they've got going on.
Interesting.
From there, we move to the credits, and from the credits, we go to the library, where Giles and Buffy are attempting to unravel the mystery of the ring. Fun fact, every book in the stacks of the library is a real book.
Ooh.
There's no fake books, there's no fancy prop magic, just good old-fashioned real books. I would have been horrible if I worked on this show, because I would have been in the library set all the time, just like seeing what books were in there.
Yes. Yep. 100%.
So Giles thinks the rune on the outside may be the rune of fidelity, but that doesn't match with any sect he knows of. Buffy, however, suggests going by the sun and the three stars on the inside, as she swears she's seen those symbols before. And she's right. She has. It's the markings of the Order of Aurelius, something she's very proud of remembering before Giles did. So it's kind of like when Dylan scores one of his few and far between points while going up against me.
I don't know what you're talking about. I'm at like 8,000 and you're at -5.
Panda says we need an actual whiteboard, or we just need to drop this nonsense.
Nope. I'm keeping track of my head. Now I'm at 9,000 and you're at -40.
But how did you just get 1,000 points?
Because Panda dared question me.
I don't think that's how this works.
That's exactly how this works. It is my point system, my points. I give them whenever I damn well please. And now I am at, 100,000.
You would have been in Gryffindor.
No, I am on the Luna Lovegood scale of Ravenclaw.
No, this like getting points because you breathe, that's a Gryffindor thing.
No. I am not getting them from some strange old man who really shouldn't be running a school. I am giving them to myself.
All right, fair. So they're interrupted by the arrival of a student, Owen, who Buffy clearly has a crush on. Giles, however, seems to have forgotten he's a librarian and that they're in the school library, as he asks Owen, "What do you want?"
This made me think of the librarian from Bob's Burgers that Billy Eichner plays.
Yes! I want that librarian to work at Sunnydale.
Billy Eichner is officially being cast as Giles in my reboot.
I love it.
Mr. Eichner, because you totally listen to this podcast, I'll have my people contact your people. Don't you worry.
So not surprisingly, Owen answers, a book. Cause duh. In the original script, Owen is described as good-natured, bookish, and it's entirely possible he has no idea how handsome he is. We also learn from the script, and later Willow in another scene, that Owen's full name is Owen Thurman. He's played by Christopher Wheel, who will go on to do many things like Boy Meets World, Popular, CSI, Psych, just a whole tons of stuff.
Good for him.
Yep, he's got a good career. Teasing Giles, Buffy reminds him that they are in a school where students learn things, something he says he was beginning to think was a myth.
I mean, he's dealing with Buffy, who, like, Buffy has taken the Degrassi course of education where whenever she needs to have a dramatic scene, she just leaves class.
Yeah, and I mean, you know, we also, given the number of people that go into that library, I'm kind of on Giles' side.
That's fair.
Owen tells them he came to get a copy of Emily Dickinson as he lost his, and he likes having one around like a security blanket.
Nerd.
I feel like once upon a time, I probably would have fallen for that. Oh, he's artistic. Oh, he's sensitive. And now I'm just like, you pretentious douchebag. I think I've grown cynical in my old age.
I am shocked. This is my shocked face.
Wait, that I would have liked him or that I've grown cynical?
That you've grown cynical.
Oh, yeah, okay. After a very awkward attempt at flirting by Buffy, Giles steps in and directs Owen to the poetry section. Heading back there, he remarks that he hadn't expected to see Buffy in the library, which immediately has Buffy questioning him, because why not? She likes books. A lot. Also, she's kind of flattered, because this means Owen's given some thought into what she's like. He checks out the book as Giles remarks, Dickinson is an okay poet. Foreign American.
Wow.
So the best part here is that Buffy's about to call Giles out because she thinks his hesitation is on the fact that Dickinson is a woman. And I'm just like, Buffy, please. Giles is from England, the land of Spice Girls. He respects girl power.
Actually, you know what? I accept that Giles is a huge Spice Girls fan and has gone to every single one of their concerts.
Of course he has, because the Spice Girls are the best.
Yes. And now I want to watch Spice World.
Spice World.
What a wonderful fever dream.
I'm glad you like that movie, because there are days I feel like Jackie and I are the only people who voluntarily watch that movie.
Oh, it is a delight. It's a fucking mess, but it's a delight.
Owen departs, promising to see Buffy and Math if he can stay awake. And Buffy is just, she's gone. She's staring after him and she's wanting to check out her own copy of Dickinson. And while Giles is very impressed that she would like to actually check out a book, he suggests that maybe they should stay on task. Something Buffy agrees to right before asking if her dress makes her look fat.
Buffy, honey, nothing makes you look fat because you're a twig. Sweet pea, who hurt you? I get that it was someone writing a script, but still.
Probably Kimberly.
That bitch.
Fucking Kimberly. We go to the cafeteria and Buffy and Willow check out, heading for a table as they talk about Owen. Willow mentions how he hardly ever talks to anyone and can brood for 40 minutes straight. She's timed him. Huh. He's silent. He's broody. He's into poetry.
Surprise. It's Angel wearing a fuck.
Well, it's not just Angel. See, Angel is like broody and silent, but Spike was a poet in his life. So I think Buffy just has a type.
I mean, fair.
They join Xander at the table as he tries to figure out just what the green stuff on his plate is. Maybe, just maybe, if you have to try and identify something, you shouldn't be eating it.
I don't know if maybe this was just my high school being aggressively somewhat upper middle class white town high school, but our lunches were insane. We had pizza line, burrito line, taco line, and it was like all actual food.
My high school didn't do lunches until my junior year, but when they started doing lunches, it was really nice. It was make your own salad bar, like assemble your own sandwich and soups and stuff. So yeah, we didn't have any of this mystery food.
Okay, so it wasn't just my high school.
So giving up on that venture, Xander asks Buffy how the slaying went. A little too loudly for her liking as she immediately hushes him. He then tries to correct it to laying before realizing that just sounds worse.
Oh, Xander, you sweet, sweet thing.
Buffy assures him it went fine and clues him and Willow into the whole Order of Aurelius, something she calls a new hoity-toity sect. Okay, again, they knew about the Master. They knew the Master has followers.
But did they know that he was actually a part of the Order of Aurelius?
No, I mean, that might be it. I guess they didn't know the Master was part of the Order of Aurelius.
Yeah.
Right away. I guess they're about to find out. But I was just like, I thought we already knew about this.
Yeah.
But I guess not. Xander remarks, though, that, hey, new vampires means more tourist dollars. And now I'm wondering if there is, like, a vampire tourist market in Sunnydale. Like, is the Hellmouth a hot vacation spot for the supernatural community?
Yes. Yes, it is.
Okay. I'm now very intrigued by this. All right. They catch sight of Owen reading alone, and Buffy remarks that maybe someone should go sit with him. Willow agreeing that it would be the polite thing to do. She heads over, but is chair blocked by Cordelia, who deliberately bumps into her, causing her to spill her tray. But it's okay, because Owen is more than happy to help, remarking now that at least Buffy doesn't have to eat her Soylent Green.
It's people!
Yes! Soylent Green refers to the 1973 film starring Charlton Heston, which in turn is loosely based upon the 1966 science fiction novel Make Room, Make Room. The title of the film refers to a foodstuff served to the citizens of this dystopian world. Foodstuff that you discover at the end is made from people.
Spoiler alert, people. Sorry about it.
I think that's something that's so ingrained in popular culture now, though. But I don't know. I mean, I didn't think the end of the Narnia books was a spoiler, but we realized that was wrong.
I actually don't know how the Narnia books end.
Oh, I'm sorry. So did we spoil you in chat?
No, because I completely forget what y'all even said.
Oh, there you go. works.
I'm doing well. The panini has been great for me.
Cordelia, completely oblivious to the fact that Owen is just not into her, proceeds to invite him to the Bronze that night, as a whole bunch of people are going. And he's up for going with Buffy, not Cordelia.
Ooh, sucks to suck. Except you don't suck, Cordy. I love you.
That's right. She doesn't suck. But in this occasion, it's kind of satisfying to see Owen choose Buffy over her.
Yes. I still just so many questions about this weird small child nightclub.
Well, he will meet her at the small child nightclub at 8.
Fucking weird, man.
In the hallway, Buffy's trying very hard to be cool about the whole thing, but she's excited. Really excited. And Willow's excited for her because she has a date with Owen. They've run into Giles and Willow tells him to tell Buffy that it's a big deal. And he agrees. But he is not talking about boys. He is talking about the Order of Aurelius and the prophecy of the Anointed One, which is meant to come to fruition that night.
Bum, bum. Specific.
It can't be that night, because that night, Buffy has her date with Owen. She insists that Giles' calculations are bad. Bad, bad, bad. To which Giles replies, he'll just hop in his time machine and go back to the 12th century to ask the vampires to postpone. You know, if only Sunnydale had time traveler Gary Murray and his detention slips.
Exactly.
And if you're confused by what we mean by that, go back and check out our episode on the Buffy movie.
You're welcome. I'm a gem.
Buffy tells him he's abusing sarcasm, and he tells her it's time to get serious, that this is no ordinary vampire, and that they have a real chance to beat back the forces of darkness, that they're going into battle, or they're sitting and waiting. No battle, no vampires of any kind. Just Buffy and Giles sitting in the cemetery. And Giles admits that he could have miscalculated, but he also reminds her that 90% of slaying is waiting. And this doesn't thrill Buffy, who is super, super adorable in her fluffy tiger coat. This coat, like the dress and the jacket combo from Prophecy Girl and the blue coat from Becoming, is kind of iconic and one of the outfits I vividly remember from the show.
Yes, 100%. And like, I don't remember much from the show, but I do remember this outfit.
I love the coat. It's so super cute. So seeing how no one seems to be rising and there are no fresh graves, Giles tells Buffy they can pack it in, which means she's free to head to the Bronze and find Owen. But not before Giles reminds her that she must keep her identity a secret. Someone realizing she's the Slayer could put them and everyone near her in danger. One, I love Buffy's line about not wearing her "I'm a Slayer, ask me how" button. I think we can all agree it's iconic. And two, what another fantastic moment in which we could have brought up the past.
We are never bringing up the past. Move on.
I will not fool Elsa it. I am not letting it go because we have all these fantastic moments when we could bring up the past because, yeah, duh, Buffy knows people finding out she's the Slayer could be really, really bad.
But also just like, even if people don't know that she's the Slayer, they're still in danger.
Anyone who lives in this town is in danger.
Sorry about it.
You chose the wrong zip code.
Yes, yes, they did.
We are on the mean streets of Sunnydale, and there may not have been fresh graves in the cemetery, but that's not the only place someone can rise. All we know is five have to die. And oh, look, there are five people on this Sunnydale airport shuttle. The driver, a lone woman, a mother and her son, and a creepy dude rambling about death. Want to guess which one's going to become the Anointed One? It's not the one you'd most expect, and it's probably not the one you'd least expect.
It's the Spanish Inquisition.
No, it is most likely the one you'd medium expect, unless you've seen this episode before, and then you just know. So from the original script, we learn the child in question is 8 years old, and that the creepy dude is officially called Militia Guy, probably due to his description being, looks like he just stepped off of Militia Monthly magazine. I'm going to keep calling him Creepy Dude.
Yes.
Buffy arrives at the Bronze, and a sign outside tells us it's DJ night, no cover. She heads inside and looks for Owen as 3 Day Wheelie's Rotten Apple plays. And the lyrics of this are fantastic because Buffy catches sight of him dancing with another girl that I am 90% sure was Cordelia, but the angle was a little funky. And they play the part of the song that says, "You're just a girl who knows no shame." And it's perfect because it's all Buffy wants. Just wants to be a nice, normal girl on a date with a cute boy.
I thought you were going to say she just wants to know no shame. And I was like, that's oddly specific.
That is possible. But no, she just wants to be a normal girl. Seeing no point in staying, she turns to leave. And we're back in the shuttle with the creepy dude still going on about fire and brimstone and the righteous. And the driver's trying to get him to like sit down and settle when a vampire, one of the order, steps out into the road and causes the shuttle to crash.
Rude.
Vampires in Sunnydale are very, very rude. They have like no sense of timing or like when a polite time to like massacre people would be.
Tisk, 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 tisk.
The driver goes out to check on the vampire he just hit, thinking it might be an ordinary person and wanting to make sure he was okay. As he leans in, the vampire reaches up and grabs him as two other vampires attack those on board the shuttle. It's a full-out massacre. The next morning, Buffy and Xander are by her locker as she tells Xander of the disastrous night before. Okay, before we get on into all that, we need to talk about the inside of Buffy's locker, because what the fuck? I see a Razorback sticker, a mini basketball hoop, some drawings of skeletons, a voodoo doll hanging from, like, hanging, and there's a cord around its neck, a stick of what looks like mini dynamite, so I don't know, maybe it's a firecracker?
Mini dynamite. Ma'am, ma'am, ma'am.
Yes.
Mini dynamite. It's a fucking firecracker.
But it looks like your little TNT, like, it does, okay. Okay, but you still shouldn't have a firecracker in your locker.
No, you shouldn't, but still.
It looks like a mini little dynamite stick, like in the cartoons. I'm gonna call it mini dynamite.
No.
A mini megaphone and a picture of a female I can't identify. What? What? I just... What? Like, does any of this say Buffy to anyone?
I don't know. I didn't use my locker, so all that was in there was just the books that I didn't take to class because I had more important things to do.
Yeah, we rarely stopped by our lockers. Like, we stopped by them, like, first thing in the morning. We stopped by them at lunch, and we stopped by them at the end of the day. We were not, like, in between class locker users. Mm-hmm. But our school was 5 floors up and down.
That's too many.
Getting back to your locker was impossible a lot of the time.
Yeah. Yeah, no thanks.
So Buffy tells Xander she just went home because in no way could she explain to Owen why she was late. Secret identity, remember? Plus saying you were hanging out in a cemetery with the school librarian just sounds so weird.
Yeah, there would be some questions to the librarian if that was the case.
Just a few. Xander reminds her that she could have lied and said something like flat tire, but whatever. Buffy laments her life as one of the dateless and they head around the corner to Xander's locker, which is also decorated very strangely, but at least seems more fitting to Xander than Buffy's did to her. In Xander's locker, we see a cutout of a skeleton like from a magazine or textbook, some psychedelic stickers, some flyers for bands or other events like the Darkest Night costume ball, a pinup girl, a cutout of some khaki shorts for some reason.
It was his outfit of the day inspo, okay?
Oh, maybe it is outfit of the day inspo. It's just, it's so weird.
Yes.
So as Xander starts going through his locker, Owen comes up, he says he missed her, and she fumbles for an excuse, eventually saying that her watch broke and her house has no clocks.
Bless her heart.
Seriously. But Owen seems to find it charming and asks her out for that night, even giving her his watch, a gold pocket watch, which makes Xander feel a little inferior as he has a Sylvester and Tweety Bird watch.
Aww.
Whatever, Xander, I think your watch is way better. Promising to pick up Buffy at 7, he departs. Poor Xander.
I would have questions if one of my classmates was like, here, have my watch. It is this fancy-ass golden pocket watch. Oh. Like, what?
Would you have questions if it was a dude who carried Emily Dickinson around as a security blanket?
Yes!
You'd have more questions?
Yes! I'm like, good sir.
This is part of his whole aesthetic.
Okay, next he's gonna whip out a fucking cane, top hat, and monocle, and all of a sudden you're dating Mr. Peanut. Do you want to be dating Mr. Peanut?
No, I do not want to date Mr. Peanut.
That's what I thought.
In the original script, Xander's watch was supposed to have Scooby-Doo on it. And I'm kind of sad now that it didn't.
I wonder why they changed that. Maybe they just couldn't find a Scooby-Doo watch.
They probably couldn't find one they liked. Buffy pops by Giles' office to make sure he is still working on decoding the prophecy and that that night is looking pretty slow. Not really giving him a chance to answer, she heads off excited about her date. And I just noticed my note said excited about her dad.
She's into that Mr. Peanut.
Apparently Buffy is working out her daddy issues by dating Mr. Peanut.
Yep. I mean, we all go through that phase.
Sometimes my notes are the gem that keeps on giving. She is excited about her date, which causes Giles to remark that she is the strangest girl.
Yes, but you can carry on.
Just, he's the best. So the master is pleased by the way his plan is proceeding, and he says that once the night is through, he'll have a powerful ally and be one step closer to escaping his prison. Because remember, the master is trapped in his lair, unable to leave. A fact he laments, saying he's almost forgotten what the outside world is like.
It has been 60 goddamn years. He's fine.
But that's okay. Soon he'll have plenty of time to remember once he takes it over.
Getting a little cocky there, buddy.
He also warns his minions not to fail him, to kill the Slayer if she tries to stop them, and give their own lives if they must. Anything to bring the Anointed One to him. Okay, but where's Darla? Why isn't she helping with this Anointed One thing? Because I think that would be something the Master would want to trust to her over these bozos.
Darla couldn't even tell that she was facing the Slayer. I think the Master is like, all right, you took the whole dumb blonde thing a little too far. You're gonna sit out. And also, maybe she had a cold.
Maybe she's busy tormenting Angel. Who knows? Buffy's getting ready for her date with Willow and Xander helping. Okay, Willow is helping. Xander is being Xander. A bit grumpy, as he's a little jealous. While Willow is pulling dresses for Buffy to try, Xander suggests a parka and a ski hat. He also suggests that Owen will tell everyone how easy she is after kissing her. Xander, why are you like this?
Because he is a child and he is jealous and just...
It's true.
Men don't know how to emote.
They do not. Willow hands Buffy a dress to put on, and Xander is turned around as Buffy gets changed. Something that leads to him playing with and breaking Buffy's jewelry box as he was trying to angle the mirror just right.
Gross.
The doorbell rings, and thinking it's Owen, they all head down. Only, surprise! It's not Owen! It's Giles.
What if Joyce answered the door?
I guess Joyce isn't home?
Yes, I forgot. She's off selling her stolen art. Carry on.
I mean, she's gotta be, because, like, she didn't come to meet Buffy's date or anything, like, when they're all standing around talking with Owen. So Joyce must have been out of town.
Ah.
Selling her artifacts.
Sounds right.
Giles has dire news. He shows Buffy the newspaper article dealing with the van accident and how it says 5 people died, including Creepy Dude, who it turned out was wanted for a double homicide.
Oh.
Which Giles thinks makes him a perfect candidate to be the Anointed One.
Silly Giles. Silly, silly Giles.
Fun fact. Giles says the Creepy Dude's name is Andrew Borba. And Borba is my cousin's last name. So I was laughing a little bit at that one. It doesn't seem very mystical, and Buffy is skeptical, mostly because she doesn't want her date with Owen ruined. Owen, of course, chooses that moment to show up. Buffy tries to play off Giles being there, but Giles isn't having it, so Willow and Xander take Owen off in the other room to have the talk. While Giles once again reminds Buffy that maintaining a normal social life while the Slayer is risky. But hey, all she wants to do is date. Clark Kent had a job. So wearing Giles down and getting him to admit that the lead is slim, she convinces him all will be fine. And she won't be far. We even get the iconic line here of, if the apocalypse comes, beep me.
Call me, beep me, if you want to reach me, if you want to page me, it's okay. You're welcome.
Is Buffy Kim Possible?
Yes.
Now? I don't think I have to point this out, but I'm going to just in case. Clark Kent obviously refers to the mild-mannered alter ego of Superman, who is a reporter for the Daily Planet.
Oh, wait, shit. I thought Clark Kent was the guy that created the United States.
Oh, well, see, that's why I had to explain.
I'm glad you did.
I know. Buffy and Owen leave, and Giles also depart, saying he's sure everything is fine, but he's going to go to the funeral home and check just in case. Willow has a bad feeling about this and wants to go along, to which Xander agrees, right up until he realizes she means the funeral home and not the Bronze. He wanted to tag along on Buffy's date, seeing as how he does not trust Owen at all.
Bless his stupid little heart.
Teenage boys, man. Xander has the tiniest little teenage boy brain.
Yes.
And it just bless his little brain. Willow continues to worry, and Xander assures her it's fine. Giles is fine. He's super librarian. Because after all, knowledge is the ultimate weapon. At the Bronze, this time Velvet Chain is on stage, playing strong, as Owen and Buffy sit in the corner talking Emily Dickinson. And the Bronze just continues to get more confusing, as behind them you can see board games. So clearly this part is very cafe, coffee shop, as opposed to the dance floor and catwalk and like club area near the stage.
I mean, who doesn't want to play board games or carry on conversations where you can't hear anyone over the fucking music?
I don't know. Fun fact, Strong is also one of the songs included on the official Buffy album, which it turns out was released October 19th, 1999. So I was right. It was the fall of my senior year.
I think I was in third grade, maybe fourth grade, but definitely not fifth grade.
Okay. As long as it was not exactly fifth grade. Owen says part of the reason he likes Dickinson is she lived this uneventful, quiet life, yet wrote about strange and often morbid things. A lot about death. And he says he feels that, can relate to it, especially the uneventful life part. Oh, and bees. We can't forget the bees. Dickinson wrote a lot about bees. So I did what I did, and I tried to deep dive and find a fairly succinct answer on why Dickinson used bees and what they were meant to represent. Well, there is no succinct answer on what bees and Emily Dickinson stand for. We could do 2 hours on just that. So sorry.
She just liked honey, okay?
He mentions how most girls he meets are frivolous and don't understand that there's more to life than dating, which strikes a chord with Buffy and has her checking her beeper as she's feeling just a bit guilty.
Fair.
And the 90s, people having beepers.
I did not have one of those.
I didn't either. I didn't have a beeper. I don't know if anyone in my high school had a beeper. I remember my mom having a beeper in the 90s.
I don't know if my I don't remember my parents having them. I don't think they did.
Buffy's is pretty cute though. It's just all pink and kind of transparent.
I miss that trend of everything being that translucent. You can see the wiring inside.
Yes, I loved that.
The best trend. Bring it back, okay?
All right, gods of marketing, you heard us. We want our 90s translucent trend back.
Unless you're trying to make a plane translucent, in which case, no, don't do that to us. That's horrible. Why would you do that to us, random marketing people?
Ugh, random marketing people, you're the worst.
The absolute worst.
Not wanting to think about whether she is one of those frivolous girls, she pulls Owen out on the dance floor. Owen telling her that she's a mystery. That as soon as he thinks he has her figured out, it's like she's someone else. Two different girls. Buffy asks him which one he likes more, and he promises to let her know. They continue to dance, and Cordelia arrives, sporting a truly awesome crimped hairstyle. That's the thing I miss. I miss crimping my hair, and now I'm thinking that maybe I should start doing it again. Like, it could make a comeback, right?
No, it cannot.
No, I can't, like, forge the revolution.
You could try, but Panda's gonna have none of it.
Fine. My hair will remain uncrimped.
You are welcome.
Spotting Buffy and Owen together, she remarks that there should be a law against such things before heading in their direction. She mentions how sad it is that Owen's there all alone, and Owen reminds her he's there with Buffy. Trying to ignore that, she asks him to dance, and Owen, once again, reminds her he's there with Buffy. Neither of these answers please Cordelia, as she's obviously not used to being someone's second choice. This is what I talk about when I talk about loving Cordelia and her transformation. Because right now, I'm watching this episode and I'm like, ugh, Cordelia, go away.
Yeah.
But it's soon. In just a short amount of time, it's going to be like, no, never leave us, Cordelia. We love you.
I'm really happy that they did not waste a lot of time with having her be that exhausting, mean girl. Because, like, her character is just so great.
It is. It is. It's really great. I love Cordelia. Even when I'm not, like, loving Cordelia's actions, I'm loving Cordelia.
Yeah.
Buffy tells Cordelia that she and Owen wish to be alone, and Cordelia huffs off, but not before telling Owen that when he's ready to play with the big leagues, he knows where to find her. Giles arrives at the funeral home, only to find it being guarded by two members of the Order. So clearly, his lead wasn't as far-fetched as he originally thought. He holds them off with a cross and runs inside. Okay, so when he runs inside, the wall right there, with the plaques and the little vases for flowers, that's where cremated remains or urns are stored. And apparently the word I'm looking for is a columbarium. And it's similar to a mausoleum and has recesses in the wall to hold urns. I don't feel like you would have that at a funeral home.
Well, I mean, they have to show their wares for their people to who have recently lost one because they are customers and they need to be like, hello, your friend or family member just died. Give me your money, friend. Look at where you could place them right here on my wall.
But columbariums are usually found in cemeteries. Like Arlington has a columbarium. You wouldn't permanently place your loved ones at a funeral
home. No, it's empty for show ones for them to be like, hello.
Oh, this whole wall is fake.
Yes. Do you want to shove your dead person inside one of these pretty things? It's going to cost you a lot of money.
That sounds awful. Do you want to shove your loved one in a wall?
Voila. I have one just for the occasion.
Oh my God. Okay, hold on. It's going to take me a minute to get over that. But okay, I could go with that. I could go with that whole wall just being like, it's a fake setup to like show someone what a columbarium would look like.
Well, no, not the columbarium. No, they're showing off the various urns that people could purchase to shove their dead person in.
No, but you can't see any urns. It's just a wall. Well,
maybe they put them away for cleaning, okay? Or they're just really bad at their job.
Okay, I think they're bad at their job. Giles heads down the hall, trying to get as far away from the vampires as possible, but they're on his tail. And back at the Bronze, Buffy and Owen are dancing, and Buffy says she almost feels like a girl. She's getting that bit of normalcy she craves so much. And this goes back to not just the song we heard earlier in the episode, but it's kind of like the scene with Pike at the end of the movie where he says, "You're not like other girls." And she says, "Yes, I am." Because that's all she wants to be, like other girls.
No, we're Buffy.
And there is another scene that originally goes after this one that they ended up cutting where I guess Buffy's guilt is continuing to nag at her because she ends up attacking a pale guy trying to use the payphone. She assumes he's a vampire and like goes to jump him and he just like offers her his quarter like, "It's okay, you can use it first."
Oh dear, the poor man.
I know, that poor goth child with pale skin. Giles has barricaded himself in the autopsy room using a filing cabinet to block the door. Seeing a window, he goes to escape only to find Willow and Xander, who came to make sure he was okay and saw the vampires going after him. Xander mentions this might be a job for Buffy, as the bars of the window make Giles' escape unlikely, and so he and Willow promise to go get her, telling Giles to sit tight. Back at the Bronze, Buffy and Owen are still on their date, and what the fuck is that chick coming down the stairs buried? I mean, not only does it look like a Muppet had to die to make that vest, she's got a feather boa on as well. I can't.
It's great. It's really great. I love it so much.
It's fantastic. Owen offers to get Buffy something to eat because I guess the Bronze is now also part restaurant.
Yes.
While Cordelia watches from the corner, still bitter as fuck that Owen didn't want to date her. Even though Buffy is literally just standing there, she claims Buffy is throwing herself at Owen in a completely disgusting display right before Angel comes through the door and Cordelia prepares to do the same, calling him salty goodness and telling her friend to call 911 because that boy is going to need some serious oxygen when I'm done with him. Oh, Cordelia, no, he's not.
Well,
for so many reasons.
Technically, he is in serious need of oxygen because he dead.
But it's not going to do anything.
I'm just saying, he dead. He is in need of oxygen.
She goes to approach Angel right as Angel walks up to Buffy. Buffy! Cordelia cannot believe this is happening to her. It is not Cordelia's night.
No, it is not.
Meanwhile, Angel is telling Buffy that he was hoping to run into her, but not for anything social, just because serious stuff is happening, and she needs to be out there doing her Slayer thing. Buffy doesn't want to listen to it, not from him, and she tries to walk away as Angel asks her what she knows. Prophecy, anointed one, yada yada yada. Angel seems not pleased by this all. Fine, you know what? Just thought I'd warn you. And I see we're back to Angel being a dick.
Look, he thought he was coming in and being the white knight, and then Buffy is like, "Bitch, where were you 3 days ago when we figured this out? Be gone."
He's mad she stepped on his moment.
Yes.
Owen returns with the muffin he got for Buffy. Okay, so maybe it's more of a coffee shop thing, but whatever. And Angel just looks highly amused. Like, go on, try to explain this. So maybe he is still a little snarky. Although, I don't know, Amazon Trivia was trying to tell me that this was David breaking character and just David cracking up. So I don't know. Uh-huh. I'm going to choose to believe it's still Angel being a dick.
That I could see that.
Buffy introduces the two, and when Owen asks where Angel knows Buffy from, he says work. But before Owen can inquire any further, Xander and Willow are there. Buffy's friends just keep popping up everywhere. Xander and Willow try to make it seem a tiny less awkward by saying they thought it would be fun to double date. And hey, you know what makes for a great double date? The Sunnydale funeral home. No.
It okay. Could. They have a great wall where they have receptacles for dead people.
I mean, yeah, I guess if that's like your idea of a good time.
Could be. We don't know Owen yet.
That's true. We don't know much about Owen. That could very much be Owen's idea of a good time.
Yep.
And it sounds like it is because Owen is all about it, but Buffy isn't because she doesn't want him coming along. It could be dangerous. But she can't tell him that. So she just brings up the whole two different people thing and tells him, well, one of those people is having a really, really good time. The other one has to go, but she'll be back. She promises. And as she leaves, she kisses him right in front of Angel.
Escandalo.
Escandalo? Are we in a telenovela now?
Yes. Buffy would be a great telenovela.
I was going to say, I want Buffy the telenovela. Could you see like telenovela Spike?
I'm going to need someone who's not my white ass to make this happen because I try as best as I can to not be problematic.
Dear Spanish speaking, Hispanic, Latino, Spanish listeners, if we have any, please give us a short summary of what Buffy the telenovela would look like.
Thank you. You're the best.
Love you. So Buffy, Willow, and Xander run off as Owen remarks she is the strangest girl, mirroring Giles' comment from earlier. The trio arrives and begins sneaking about only to run into Owen, who wonders if they'll see a dead body. Leaving Owen with Willow and Xander, Buffy heads back to the autopsy room to try to find Giles. And it doesn't look so good. The room has been ransacked, the bars on the window bent, but then a drawer opens and Giles pushes himself out, having climbed atop a body to hide, which, unsure if the vampires were looking just for Giles or for the anointed one, they decide they have to investigate further, but first they need to get Owen to safety. And Giles just cannot believe Buffy brought a date along, and though she does make sure to tell him that she did not bring him, he just showed up. And as they can't send Owen out into the night because they don't know where the brethren are, they have Xander and Willow hide with him in an observation room while Buffy pokes around looking for clues and or vampires. And I love the little sequence with like Buffy and Giles like opening the drawers.
Yeah.
I'm very hesitant to say it's cute because it's in a funeral home, but it's definitely cute and you could almost like imagine the Benny Hill music being over it.
Yes.
Back in the observation room, Willow and Xander work on barricading the door while Owen pokes at things, eventually drawing back the curtains and revealing a room on the other side of the glass where one of the bodies is laid out under a sheet. A body that begins moving just about the time Buffy and Giles say the anointed one must be gone as they've searched all the drawers and that's the only place bodies would be, right?
Nope.
The body on the table is Creepy Dude, who uses his head to break the glass, separating him from the others. Hearing the crash, Buffy goes running as the others scramble to undo their barricade and get free. Running into them in the hall, Buffy tells them to leave as she goes after Creepy Dude, who is now like singing church hymns to himself as he walks about, just like living his best vampire life. Unfortunately, they can't leave because brethren lurking outside. Buffy claims the stake from Giles and goes to work as Owen says someone has to help her and leaves Willow and Xander to find her. Everything comes to a head in the autopsy room, which, okay, I'm guessing, I keep calling it an autopsy room, but I'm guessing it's more a preparation room.
Mm.
And apparently also a crematorium, as when Giles gets slammed into the wall, he accidentally turns on the cremation oven.
Rude.
I feel the room where the drawers are and the cremation oven would not actually be in the same room, but I don't know.
Well, in Bob's Burgers, they're in the same room.
Oh, that's true. Yeah, in Mort's they are. I guess if it's a small funeral home and you don't have
the space.
Yeah. Owen rushes to help Buffy, but ends up getting knocked out himself. Now Buffy's really mad and she kicks the shit out of the vampire, telling him, "You killed my date," before maneuvering it so that he slides into the oven, Giles slamming the door shut. Of course, somewhere in the fight, she does another wholly unnecessary flip off the table, but it looks really cool, so we're gonna let it slide.
I wonder, so when do we think the vampire dies and doesn't experience every second of being burnt to a crisp, if the quickest way to kill them is stabby stabby to the heart? Do we think it's when the heart gets burnt to a crisp? Because that's dark.
I don't know if it's like because vampires burn in the sun. I don't know if like a vampire is highly I don't know. But yeah, it couldn't have been pleasant.
Yeah, nope.
Seeing Owen is actually okay, Buffy goes to him and tells him they managed to scare the guy off. And Owen says that's good because he totally would have done something, which Buffy knows. She knows he would have. So it's interesting to note here that Willow was the first to notice Owen was okay. But before she could say something to Buffy, Xander told her to give Buffy a moment. Let her finish the fight. We'll see Xander pull almost the same exact move at the end of season two, when Willow sends him with the message that she is close to restoring Angel's soul, and Xander instead tells Buffy to kick his ass. Half due to his dislike of Angel, and half because he knows Buffy needs to be prepared to kill him if it comes down to it without without hesitation.
Yeah.
So I was like, that's an interesting little, Xander's done this more than once.
Yep. He's just, he tries to be good. He's just fucking 15 years old and a shithead because everyone's a shithead when they're 15.
Oh yeah. We're going to see maximum shithead Xander next week. Buffy tells Owen she knows this wasn't what he had in mind and he agrees. He thought they'd be ending the night at Ben and Jerry's. She says they still could, but he just wants to go home.
Fun fact, this is the year that I had my birthday party at Ben and Jerry's and they locked us in the freezer.
Intentionally?
Yes. They had the glowing stars on there and then we made ice cream. The end.
Aw, little not fifth grade Dylan was making ice cream in a Ben and Jerry freezer.
80% sure I was in third grade because I was in fifth grade in 2001.
All right. So third grade Dylan made ice cream for his birthday. Oh my God, I can't. That's the cutest thing I've ever heard.
I was very boring and went with vanilla and would do the same today.
Why?
Because vanilla's fucking delicious, bitch. And the most versatile for toppings.
It is the most versatile for toppings. I'll give you that.
So there.
As Owen leaves, Giles moves to comfort her, but Buffy's not ready and tells him don't. So the next morning at Sunnydale High, Buffy walks along with Willow and Xander trying to find out if Owen said anything about her on the way home. Buffy's pretty sure she blew it, and Xander uses this as a way to mention that maybe she needs a guy who already knows her secret and is okay with it. A guy like him, maybe? But he doesn't get a chance to suggest himself because Owen appears and Willow drags Xander off so he and Buffy can talk. Turns out Buffy didn't blow it, and Owen wants to see her again. He thinks she's incredible, but not for the right reasons.
Aww.
Seems he liked the rush of almost getting killed. Made him feel alive. Buffy lives dangerously, and he wants that too. To the point where he suggests walking through town at 3 a.m. and picking a fight in a bar. He does remember he's in high school, right? I mean, I know he looks 35, but he remembers he's a high school student, right?
I was wandering around town at 3 a.m. in high school, but I wasn't picking fights with people at bars.
See, that was the part I had a problem with. Like, the one around at 3 a.m. We all had the nights we did random stuff. We used to go out at like 2 a.m. in Jackie's neighborhood. Sometimes we attempted to steal her street sign because she lived on Stoner. But yeah, no, we're not like going to bars to pick fights with people.
Yeah, no, none of that. None of that was happening.
Knowing it will never work and wanting someone who wants her for her, not the danger that surrounds her, Buffy breaks things off with Owen, something it clearly pains her to do. As he walks away, Giles approaches and tells Buffy of when he first learned he was destined to be a watcher. He was 10, and like his father and grandmother, he was expected to carry on the family tradition. Buffy asks if he was thrilled beyond measure, and Giles honestly tells her no. He had very definite plans, little 10-year-old Giles. He wanted to be a fighter pilot or a grocer.
No.
I love this scene. I love everything about this scene.
Do we ever learn about Giles' mom?
We don't learn about Giles' mom. We learn a lot about Giles' dad and the Giles side of the family, especially when we get to the comic books. We learn about Great Gran,
yep,
who was a watcher and was head of the Watchers Council at one point. And we learn about her sisters who are magic users.
Oh, fun.
Yeah, we do learn a bit about the Giles side of the family, but I don't think we learn a lot about Giles's mom.
Lame.
Giles tells her that Owen seemed like a nice lad and she agrees he was, but he wanted danger and that meant he wouldn't be careful. 2 days in her world and he'd get killed. She'd get him killed or get someone else killed. At which she pointedly looks at Giles and do I even have to say it? You know where I'm going. Especially as Giles reminds her he went to the funeral home of his own accord. You know who went after Lothos of their own accord?
No one, because that time does not exist. The Spanish Inquisition went after Lothos. I mean, the Spanish Inquisition probably did try and go after Lothos.
I was gonna say, I'm pretty sure that's something that happened. But no, Merrick also intervened of his own accord and ended up dead. And that's clearly what Buffy is. And I just, I need this to be acknowledged. I swear one day I will get over this. Today is not that day.
It won't get acknowledged. Too bad. So sad.
They talk some more and Giles says that despite all his books, he doesn't have an instruction manual for life. That sometimes they just need to feel their way through. But he tells her as a slayer, she's doing pretty well. And they did stop the prophecy from coming to fruition, which means the master is also probably having a pretty bad day.
You're a lying liar that lies, Giles, but we still love you.
He is. Before we get to that, though, there are some deleted lines here. After Giles says that she's doing pretty well, Buffy points out that Giles complimented her, and Giles says something about not calling attention to it. And it just, it digs the knife deeper into my heart because it very much reminds me of the whole, like, Merrick, you made a joke.
Merrick who?
Rude. But yes, Giles is a lying liar who lies because the master is not having a bad day.
No, he is not.
Because they did not stop the prophecy. While they were distracted by creepy guy, the real anointed one, or as I shall be calling him from here on out, the annoying one. Thank you, Spike. Met up with the order. And surprise! The annoying one was the small child. But like 90% of you already knew that. So a little background on this whole anointed one being a child thing. Apparently, when they began writing this episode, the idea of the child, who is apparently named Colin, being the anointed one wasn't a thing. In fact, in the like very, very first draft of this, it was 7 vampires. And there was going to be this big fight scene with like the 7 of them. And then for budgetary reasons, it got cut down to 5. And then finally, it was decided to have the anointed one be a child because no one would expect that. And back in 1997, we totally didn't expect that. But now, that would be my first guess as to who the anointed one would be.
But here's the thing. They didn't do that because it was creepy. They did that also for budgetary reasons because they can pay children nothing. Well, not nothing, but you know, like less than compared to what they had to pay an adult. So they were fully like, we're gonna save some money.
I'm sure that was also it, but when you read interviews or you read the vampire sections of like the monster guide and stuff, it very clearly states that the creator was like, but what if it was the child? No one will see it coming. But I'm sure they also were like, oh, hey, and if we do that, we can save some money on actors.
Exactly.
But that's it. That's Never Kill a Boy on the First Date. So do you have any final thoughts, suggestions for date night, feelings?
You know my suggestion for date night.
I do know your suggestion for date night. We did that in the beginning. We talked about your perfect date.
Exactly.
Thank you all for listening, and make sure you join us next week when we take on season 1, episode 6, The Pack.
Yay!
Which is my favorite episode of season 1.
I'm excited for this episode to happen.
I'm so excited. Until then, you can check out our various social media channels, all of which will be listed in the show notes. And if you like the show and you want to let us know it, you can subscribe, rate and review, or write to us directly at thewatchersdiaries@gmail.com. Bye!
Toodles!